Yes, those were the days. I was actually supposed to go on a retreat in the mountains in Nepal, and I got there was no email in those days, so it must have been a telegram or some message from Lama Zopa that said, go to Singapore. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. And I said, where's Singapore? And so I eventually got a flight. I came here. I didn't really know anybody. And I was at the Taipei Temple, right off Ballester Road. And my room overlooked the Columbarium. And then later, Alice, who was our first director, offered me her bedroom in her one-bedroom flat. And she slept on the couch the whole time. And then I lived at Jan's house and somebody else's house. And I was moving around a lot. And ABC was moving around a lot. We rented a place in Geelong sometimes, on River Valley Road sometimes, in some place, what's it called? Anyway, some other places. And, yeah, and it was very interesting because my whole endeavor of writing books began in Singapore. There was one young man who came to see me maybe the first or second day I was here, and he had a lot of Dharma questions, and I answered them. And then as I began giving talks, Dharma talks, other people would ask questions, and people were asking very much the same questions. And then somebody loaned me a computer, you know, one of the old kind with the black screen and the green dots. Yeah, and the big discs, yeah. So I started writing, questions and answers. And then another man came, and he said, if you ever want to do a book for free distribution, let me know, I'll help. And so all the conditions came together, and, ABC published I Wonder Why, okay. Very small booklet with a mountain on the cover, and people really liked it. I was quite surprised. And then that book gradually later, after some years, when I went back to the U.S., I added more questions and answers to it, and then Snow Lion published it as What Color Is Your Mind? And then I re-edited it again, and now it's published under the title Buddhism for Beginners. Yeah, and then other books came from there, and some of them, the roots were here in Singapore, because people asked me questions. One young man at Neon Pali Buddhist Society said, I need a book that I can give my mom that doesn't have a lot of Sanskrit and Pali and Chinese and Tibetan terms. And so I thought, yeah, we do need something like that. So, I still had that computer, so started writing, yeah. And that, that came out as, in Singapore, as Taming the Monkey Mind, and now it's Taming the Mind, yeah. Yes, and then Pearl of Wisdom 1 or 2, different prayer books. These were written at Alice's flat because she went to work every morning, and I sat down at the computer in the corner and started typing up prayers and so on. And it was really quite amazing, the early days, because we didn't have any location. And but somehow people came together, lots of people helped. And then after some months, Hup Ching called me, and you had just come back from Dharamsala, I think, and had talked to Geshe Sonam Rinchen and Ruth and heard about ABC. Yeah, the name ABC at that time was just kind of a loose one, you know, because there's no place. It wasn't, yeah, the legal documents weren't completed at that time. But so it's totally amazing for me to come back now and see what Amitabha Buddha Center has become. I mean, it's just totally amazing. And how many people have come, the different kind of classes you have, you know, even for seniors, and you have a primary school, isn't it? And all sorts of classes, and Venerable Sangha Kadra was here for 10 years, and Geshe Chuni, you know, is well, he's supposed to be here, but he's very, very busy nowadays. But you've had wonderful teachers over the years, and so many teachings and classes, and you people are really, really fortunate. Yeah. And when I first came, I came in 87, at the end of 87, and then I was here through 88 and the beginning of 89. Venerable Dhammika and I were the only two people who spoke about Buddhism in English. Yeah. Now you have so many centers, so many different things going on. Yeah, so it's really changed. And I think also the quality of teachings that you're getting now with so many more teachers coming, and the quality of questions that the people here are asking has also really, really improved. That's not to say people didn't ask good questions when I first came. Actually, they were very good questions, but they're different than the questions that are being asked now. When I first came, the most common question was about burning paper money. And is that a Buddhist practice? Yeah, because actually when I arrived in Singapore, it was the seventh month. I went to the Taipei temple, and I walked in to pay my respects to the Buddha. And there were long tables with like mannequins sitting behind them and food in front of them. And I said, what's this? Because they don't do that in Tibet Buddhism. And then there were things out in the middle of streets with people with eggs and smashing eggs. And I was saying, what's that? And then people are asking me about paper money. And yeah, so people don't ask about those things anymore. It seems like that those kind of questions, you know, it's been clarified now. What is folk religion and ancestor worship? And what is Buddhism? You know, and that they're different. So I really, you know, that's fantastic just to get that clarified in people's minds. Yeah. So, yeah, you've really done quite a wonderful job. Many Buddhas here, yeah. And, yeah, so congratulations. Please continue. Centers depend on volunteers, yeah. They don't happen by themselves. Yeah. As much as when you're in charge, you would like things to just go, whoop, and they're there. Actually, they depend on a lot of people contributing, especially on volunteers, you know, people volunteering. So I really encourage you to do that. And also because when you volunteer, you get so much out of it yourself, because you get to see how things are organized, how things work. Yeah, you get to come in this room when nobody else is here, because you have to set up the altar, you know, or clean the Buddha statue or something. So, yeah, consider it. It's very helpful. Okay, so today we're going to talk about anger. which I am sure nobody here has. Okay, and you all came with your siblings, spouses, parents, children, colleagues, neighbors, and they're sitting next to you, and during the talk, you're going to poke them and say, listen to her, you have a problem with anger. Yeah? Because nobody here has that problem. We just have to deal with all these uncooperative people. Yeah? Amazing, isn't it? I have a friend who does mediation. He's a lawyer, but he does mediation. And I went to one of his classes one time. Not class, it was like a seminar over a weekend. And he was asking the people, you know, how many of you are here because, you know, you have difficulties with other people, you know, because of your own anger or bias or whatever. Nobody raised their hand. How many of you are here because you have to deal with people who have anger and bias? Everybody raised their hand. And he said, oh, it's so interesting. All the people who want to learn about conflict resolution are the people who have no anger and no problems. But all the troublesome people, yeah, they don't come to the center. He said, this happens every single time I lead a center. I wonder why. Yeah? So think about it. Okay, before we actually start, let's have a few minutes of silent meditation and let the mind settle down. So you might meditate, you know, watch your breath or watch your anger, just in case a little bit of it comes. And then after that, we'll generate our motivation. So let's cultivate our motivation now. And this motivation is one that needs to be totally free from anger. So if there's somebody that you're mad at now, instead of looking at that person and listing everything they did that you don't like, look at them and say, they are a sentient being just like me. And the most important thing in their lives is they just want to be happy and not have suffering. So look at them and really think that about whoever it is that you really don't like or don't trust or who has harmed you. They just want to be happy and not suffer, exactly like me. Inside, in the depths of my heart and their heart, we're the same. We don't want to suffer. We want to be happy. And these people who harm me, why did they do it? Because they're unhappy. And they don't know what the cause of happiness is. So in their effort to be happy, they actually do actions that harm others, and in doing so, create negative karma. And the seeds of those negative karma are on their mind stream. And those seeds will ripen and sprout in another lifetime, bringing them suffering. So that's kind of a tragic situation, isn't it? They want to be happy, be free of suffering, but they keep creating the causes of suffering. Just like me. And so, just as we want other people to be patient and compassionate with us, and forgive us when we make mistakes. So isn't this person who we're mad at, aren't they also an object of compassion? Aren't they worthy of compassion because their ignorance prevents them from actually seeing what the causes of happiness are. And so they don't know how to create it, and instead create the cause of suffering. So that's a tragic situation. So they're worthy of our compassion and our forgiveness. And when we look around the world at the various wars and conflicts. It's the same. Everybody wanting happiness, not suffering, not knowing the causes of happiness, and so creating the causes of suffering ignorantly. So instead of getting angry when we read the newspaper, instead of getting discouraged or having despair about the state of the world, let's generate compassion for everybody instead. And let's enlarge that compassion towards all sentient beings who have been kind to us and will continue to be kind to us. And let's generate bodhicitta, aspiring to attain full awakening so that we can be of the greatest benefit to all living beings. And just as our teachers are doing whatever they can to help us be free from samsara, may we repay the kindness of sentient beings and repay the kindness of our teachers by helping other living beings be free from samsara and attain full awakening. So let's make that our motivation for sharing the evening together. So let's start out with talking about what anger is. Yeah, because the Buddhist definition of anger is different than the worldly one and the ones that the psychologists have. Okay, in psychology, they usually talk about anger as an internal feeling. You know, and also they talk about it as your actions. Yeah. In Buddhism, we talk about anger as a mental factor in our mind. And it's an afflicted mental factor, meaning that the way it perceives objects is incorrect. And it's something that disturbs the peace of our mind. So anger is based on exaggerating the negative qualities of a person or an object. And since we've exaggerated those negative qualities, or we've projected negative qualities that aren't there, we want to strike back at whatever it is that is disturbing our peace. Okay? So that's how Buddhism talks about anger. Yeah. Anger leads to different kinds of behavior. So we usually think anger means yelling and screaming and throwing things. Okay, well, yes, anger can come out as yelling and screaming and throwing things. Okay, but it can also come out as being very withdrawn, very quiet, not saying anything. Okay, in other words, you are so angry that you grit your teeth, you go to another room, you close the door, and you sit there and fume because of what this person did. That is so unacceptable. Right? And you're so hoping, especially if this is somebody you really care about, that they come in the room and they say, "Are you okay? Are you angry?" And you go, "No, I'm not angry." Yeah. So some of us are exploders. Some of us are imploders. Yeah. Who's an exploder here? Okay. Who's an imploder? Oh, I see none of you explode. Yeah. You just stuff it all inside and put a smile on your face. How many of you are imploders and exploders depending on the situation? Okay, now we're getting real. Yeah. So it's interesting. You can't really tell anger from the behavior. Because somebody can be very quiet because they're furious. They can also be very quiet because they're peaceful. Somebody can be very animated and speak very strongly because they're angry. And somebody can be animated and speak strongly because they need to get a message across, and that way of speaking is the only way to get the other person to understand. For example, okay, you have a 3-year-old child who likes, how many of you are parents? Okay, so you know 3-year-old kids. What do 3-year-old kids like to do besides say no? Is they like to run out in the middle of streets, don't they? Oh, there's the ball. Oh, there's something bright. Oh, I want to go to the other side. Woo, they run out in the middle of the street. Now, if your kid runs out in the middle of the street and you go out and very gently pick them up and say, "Sweetheart, you know, it's not so safe to run out in front of cars. You could get killed." And you put the child down. Is that child going to remember what you said? No. If you pick the child up and you shake them and you look them, just shake them once, not like a pepper shaker. Okay. And you look them in the eye and you say, "Do not run out in the middle of the street. It is dangerous. You could get very hurt." If you talk like that, will the child remember better? Yeah. Are you angry? No, you love that child. Yeah, you're doing it because you love them, not out of anger. Okay, so you can't tell by the behavior necessarily if somebody is peaceful or angry. Okay. So then we have the question, is anger beneficial or not? Yeah. Well, anger definitely is a natural emotion of ordinary sentient beings in samsara. Yeah? We all have anger. I'm sorry, you're not special. You're not the only one who has anger, and you are not somebody who doesn't have anger if you are a sentient being in samsara. Okay? So anger is there. Does it benefit us? Okay. Now, anger, it's very interesting because some people at the university say anger is quite good because it lets us know that something's wrong. So one time when I was invited to teach some people in the conflict mediation department at the University of Michigan, and they asked me to speak about anger. So I started talking about the disadvantages of anger. And they cut me off and they said, but anger is beneficial. Yeah, because you know something's wrong when you're angry. If you don't have anger, you're oblivious to something that's bothering you. Okay? And then, you know, if you go with the scientists and the neuroscientists and so on, then they say that anger is hardwired in us, in our amygdala, some part of the brain back here. Okay, it's from the animal, our ancestors as animals. And so we are hardwired that when there's danger, to fight back or to run away, fight or flight. And that this is part of our biological being, part of the chemistry in our brain, and it's protected us human beings from being slaughtered by any other creature as we were evolving from apes to who we are now. Okay, so they say you need that kind of anger, yeah, to keep yourself alive. If you don't, you're just going to stand there and, you know, they're going to kill you or whatever. Okay, so this is what the people at the university said. So, when you think about it, though, yeah, first of all, in Buddhism, the mind and the brain are two different things. So the brain may be having different chemical and electrical things going on, but those are not our emotions. Those are not consciousness. They're just physical, chemical, biological, electrical events. Consciousness is what makes us living beings. It's the part of us that cognizes objects, engages with objects, feels, experiences, thinks, have emotions, and so on. Consciousness is not made of atoms and molecules. You can't measure it with scientific instruments. So the scientists may, you know, see things going on in our brain, in our amygdala or other parts of our brain when we're angry, but those things are not the anger. Okay, so consciousness is what experiences anger. I assume most Buddhists don't feel that or don't think of that anger is hardwired biologically into us, okay? Or even if it is, that there's certain biochemical things that happen, still it's the consciousness that creates the anger because it exaggerates defects or projects defects. And it's the consciousness that experiences the anger. Okay. So we can't just kind of say, well, you know, yeah, I'm anger. It's hardwired. It's my brain. I can't do anything to control it. Yeah. So I find it a little bit, very difficult when people start saying that our brain and our genes control all of our responses and our temperaments as human beings. Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah, because from a Buddhist viewpoint, we don't come in as empty slates with just a brain that is then conditioned. Yeah, we come in with consciousness. And we come in with karma. Yeah? The seeds of the deeds that we've done in our past lives. Yeah. So we are not blank slates. Yeah. The seed of anger is in us. Yeah. That's not chemical or electric. Yeah. The seed of anger is there. And when it meets the proper conditions, it ripens into manifest anger. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's hardwired. And I don't think we can blame our brain or even genes or anything like that. In fact, one time I was talking to a scientist at one of the Mind and Life conferences. And I said, when you're angry, yeah, do you just think, oh, this is nothing to be concerned about. It's just some electrical things going on in my brain and some synapses kind of, you know, firing. Yeah. So the anger is nothing to worry about. I don't need to get angry. The synapses are just doing their things. Yeah. I said, do you think that and then calm down? No. Yeah. That was really revealing because he believes that the anger is in the brain. But when he's angry himself, he doesn't believe the anger is in the brain. Yeah. Because if you do, you could just say, yeah, it's nothing to be concerned about. It's just, you know, these things. Yeah, and then the people from the mediation department, they got really mad at me. Yeah, and like, how can you say that anger isn't good? It's good, you know? And, you know, when you think about anger in your life, is anger good? Does it benefit you? You have a huge rush of adrenaline, okay? And you feel very powerful when you're angry. Is that true power? The anger, the power that you feel when you're angry, is it real power? Yeah, why not? Well, real power, if people had real power, they would think about things and make good decisions. When you're angry, do you make good decisions? Anybody here make good decisions when they're angry? Anyone? I do work with incarcerated people in prison. And aside from the fact that most of them committed whatever their crime was under the influence of alcohol or drugs, besides that, so much of why they're in prison is because of actions that they did when they were angry. Because when you're angry, you don't think clearly. Yeah. In fact, there's something called a refractory period, that when you are in, have very intense emotions, like anger, greed, you know, something like that, and it's really intense, you cannot take in any information that would contradict that emotion. So when you're angry, even if somebody tries to explain to you that you misinterpreted what they said, and that's the reason they're angry, you can't even hear them. Yeah? It goes in one ear and out the other. Because of this refractory period, because the adrenaline and so forth just takes over, and we cannot think clearly. Yeah. I was really shocked one time to see that happen with somebody and talk to somebody and try to, you know, they were getting angry and try to explain that they had misunderstood. And they couldn't hear what I said because even I asked them, please repeat to me what I said. And they sat there and they couldn't repeat to me what I said. Yeah. So us too, when we get overwhelmed by anger, we cannot take in any new information until the anger calms down. Okay. Can we make good decisions in that state of mind? No. Yeah. Now, what's interesting about anger is we see this situation as in a very simplistic way. Okay? Somebody did something that I don't like. What's happening? They're wrong. We're right. They have to change. Very simple. Yeah, I have no responsibility in the disagreement. Yeah, I'm completely innocent. I meant well. Everything is their fault because they're exaggerating and projecting and misunderstanding. Right? Right? Aren't you poking your husband or wife now and saying, listen? Yeah. So, when you're angry, do you ever think, oh, I'm misunderstanding the situation? Do you ever think I'm exaggerating? Yeah. When you're angry, do you ever think that you're possibly wrong? No. If you thought that you were possibly wrong, you wouldn't be mad at the other person. Yeah? And so that is a very good indication that when we are angry, we are not seeing things realistically. Yeah, we're seeing them very colored. We're seeing them in a skewed manner, not in an accurate manner. And that should, you know, should, it doesn't, but it should give us pause to really say, why am I angry? Yeah, and it's usually, why am I angry? Them. Okay. And we look at anger, yeah, my anger, you know, because remember, I have no responsibility. My anger is not my fault. It is not my responsibility. It's because of what somebody else did. So somebody else, let's say they said something, and we see it as there's the anger coming out of their mouth and these sound waves, you know, of saying, you're a jerk. You know, they're calling us a name. The sound waves of you're a jerk are coming closer and closer and closer and closer. And they go in my ears. And then my synapses send that somewhere in my brain. And then anger! You see, it's like a virus. I caught it from them. Yeah? It came out of their mouth, and I caught it, and it's actually worse than COVID. Yeah, COVID, you know, now we don't have the really bad kind of COVID that kills you. Now it's more a more docile kind of COVID. It's still not fun. Yeah. But anger can get us killed. Yeah. If you get really angry, it can get you killed. One young man came to tell me one time, yeah, because I was talking about anger in a class, and he said he was driving along the highway with his fiancée. He was in the left lane, which would be the right lane in Singapore. Okay, so he was in the right lane. He had many, like, three or four lanes of traffic here before, you know, the side. So somebody came and cut him off, and he has road rage. Now, you know road rage? Who has road rage here? Okay, only three people. Oh, really? Let's try that again. Us road rage here. Oh, a few more hands up. Okay. So he's driving along. Somebody cuts him off. He explodes in anger, and he wants to retaliate. So he steps on the gas. Yeah, his fiance is sitting here. He steps on the gas. And then he cuts the other person off on the highway. But when he did so, he lost control of the car. And the car went across three or four lanes of moving traffic on the highway into the side of the road before it stopped. And he just sat there and realized that he could have killed his fiancée. By that kind of behavior, he could have killed her. Yeah? Yeah. So think of so when we really look at it, anger doesn't really, I can't see many advantages to it. Now, we have wars going on right now, okay? Actually, I've been to Israel to teach the Dharma in previous years, so I have friends there. And they're really angry. The Buddhist ones are really trying to deal with what happened. But people in Israel right now are really angry because of what Hamas did, you know, in coming into their country, killing 1,400 people, destroying their homes, kidnapping people, even, you know, they took babies, yeah, into Gaza, kidnapped them, and are holding them as hostages. They killed many other people. Actually, when I was watching the news report on it, one of the people in one of the kibbutzes, that kibbutzim that had been attacked by Hamas, She was talking about her experience. I said, that's my friend. And she's talking about how she went in the safe room and the door wouldn't lock, and she's trying to lock it because she could hear them coming, and they came and pounded on her door. You know, so people are really afraid and they're very angry. Yeah. Hamas is also angry. They've been angry a long time. Israelis have been angry a long time. Okay. Now, some people say we need anger to bring about social change, to correct injustice. Yeah. Because they say, you know, the people who are protesting are angry. And if you protest, yeah, maybe not in Singapore, but in other countries, you can influence the government. Yeah. But when you look and also what's interesting about this thing with the Palestinians and the Israelis is both of them lost their land and their country about the same time, around 1950. Okay? So just around the same time. In terms of the Palestinians with Yasser Arafat as their leader, yeah, there were kidnappings, I forget, in the Olympics. Does anybody remember? Or was it, I think,
around Munich, 1972.
Yeah.
Munich.
In
1972.
Yeah, 1972. Okay. And so some Palestinians went in and took and killed some of the Israeli athletes. Yeah. And then there were hijacking of planes where Palestinians came in, hijacked the planes, brought the planes and the passengers to some other country, and then they had to have, raids to try and rescue the hostages. I can't pronounce things tonight. And many people were killed by hijacking the planes. Yeah. And then, of course, as we know throughout the years, they would fire bombs, or rockets over the border. They would land on Israel. Yeah. And as the Israelis would throw some rockets back, they'd land on Gaza. People would get killed. Yeah. Okay, so that's kind of from that conflict. Yeah. If you look at the Tibetan conflict, okay, the Tibetans also lost their land around 1949, 1950. How many people have died in the Tibetan search for freedom? No hijackings. No murders, no hostages. The people who died were because communist China, especially during the Cultural Revolution, there were so many people who died in China, in Tibet, all over that area then. Okay. But the Tibetans didn't kill anybody. Yeah, within the last 10 years, there were some Tibetans in Tibet and one or two in India in exile who self-immolated, you know, in protest of the Chinese occupation of Tibet. Yeah. His Holiness, I was there in Dharamsala, and it was during one of His Holiness's big teachings, when one Tibetan man in Delhi self-immolated and died. And of course, the Tibetans were looking at him as a martyr, as a hero. Yeah, His Holiness had to, he couldn't say that was a foolish activity. He couldn't say that directly. But what he said to the Tibetans, and what he had been saying for years, is don't hate the communist Chinese. Don't hate them. And then when that man self-immolated, he said, it's better for you to live for Tibet than to die for Tibet. And I hope that stopped other people from self-immolating. Yeah. But there were no attacks. Some of the Tibetan young people were restless. You know, they were thinking about violence. His Holiness, you know, every time he gave a public teaching, don't be angry, don't turn to violence, it doesn't solve anything. And people listened to him. So here, now, how many years past 1950, you know, over 70 years, the Palestinians still don't have their land and their country. The Tibetans still don't have their land and their country. But in that process, how so many Palestinians and Israelis have died. Yeah. And the Tibetans have not caused death. So we don't, anger in those kind of situations is not productive. Yeah. And why do people respect the Dalai Lama? It's because he's nonviolent. Yeah. And so the Tibetans have a lot of respect from the world because they are nonviolent. They're not acting out of anger. Okay. So something to think about. Yeah. And I really saw this also prior to that. When I was in university, it was during the Vietnam War. And so the young people, we were all demonstrating against the war because we thought the war was unneeded, it was ridiculous. So many thousands of people getting killed, not only on the American side, but even more on the Vietnamese side. And we thought the war should stop. So I was at one demonstration, and the protesters, we were peacefully demonstrating. We were lined up here across the field. This was on campus where the police in there with their, you know, helmets and their shields and the whole thing. And we're protesting. And then the person next to me reached down and picked up, it was either a brick or a rock. And he threw it at the police as hard as he could. And my mind said, no. If you throw something, if you're violent, your mind is just like the mind of the people who are fighting, who are the officials, the government, who is causing this war. It's the same kind of mind, yeah, of I'm angry, I've got to destroy the other person, retaliate, stop them from doing what they're doing. And my anger will be successful in doing that. And I saw him throw something, I just said, mm-mm. It just, because look at it, the mind, the mental state's exactly the same, isn't it? Yeah, the people in Washington, D.C. sending the fighter planes and the ships and everything over there out of anger. Yeah, the guy throwing the brick out of anger. Same mental state. Okay, so I'm going into a lot of depth about this because we need to understand first that there's no benefit from anger. Yeah. And especially if you look at it from a Buddhist side, yeah, when we harm others out of anger, we're also harming ourselves. Because anger is a defilement, it's an afflictive emotion, it creates negative karma when it arises in our mind, and then our body and speech, physically and verbally, can create negative karma when we act out of anger. So when we harm somebody else, we're actually harming ourselves because we're increasing the seeds of negative karma in our own mind stream. So whenever you think, you know, I'm holding a grudge and I want to get my revenge, yeah, just remember that you're creating cause for your own suffering in a future life. And also, yeah, the Buddha said that when we're angry, we destroy our own virtue. So we all know that we work hard to create merit, don't we? We work hard and we make offerings, we do prostrations, we, you know, all your Vesak Day celebrations, writing out the Prajnaparamita Sutra and so on, you know, all these things. But when you're angry, it burns up the merit that you created. Yeah. So there's no benefit to us from getting angry. Yeah. You feel powerful, but it's a false sense of power, and you can't think clearly and make a lot of mistakes. Okay? And I'm sure that we could all tell a lot of stories, because I'm sure we've all been angry and done really stupid things when we were angry. Yeah. Anybody who hasn't done that? Yeah. And sometimes, who do we direct the anger towards? Yeah. Let me ask you, who do you get the most angry at? The people you love or strangers? The people you love. You get angrier at them than at strangers. Isn't that strange? The people that you care about the most are the ones that you get angry at the most. Who do you say the most cruel, inconsiderate, awful things to? The people you love or a stranger? The people you love. The most awful things that come out of our mouth are usually towards the people we love the most. We hurt the people we care about the most. Yeah, what do you think about that? Is that smart? Is that kind? Does it benefit us? To have good relationships with people, good relationships are based on trust. Yeah, we have to trust people to open up and share our lives and our thoughts and things with them. Trust is very important in relationships. Yeah? And so we have to build up trust over a period of time. We don't all, you know, oh, hello, I trust you completely with everything. You know, it's like we get to know somebody and the trust builds up. But just one episode of rage and saying horrible things or doing horrible things totally destroys that trust, doesn't it? Yeah? Totally destroys it. And it's usually the people that we care about the most. And then we have to reestablish that trust. And it takes a long time to reestablish it. Yeah. I mean, just if you have doubt about that, how do you feel when somebody you care about says awful things to you? Do you just instantly, well, that's okay, no problem? Yeah. We get upset and the trust is broken, and trust is something very, very precious in our relationships. Yeah. So we get angry at the people we care about the most, probably because of attachment. Yeah, the more attachment we have, the more anger we have. When that person doesn't meet our expectations, when they don't do what we want them to do, when they disappoint us, yeah, then we really go crazy. Uh-huh. And we yell and scream at them. Yeah, parents. How many parents here have never yelled and screamed at their kids? Yeah? Your kids are some of the people you care about the most about, don't you? Yeah? Often you care them more about your kids than you do about your spouse. But what do you say to your kids? You got a bad grade in school. I'm so disappointed in you. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah. I mean, the kid needs help. Yeah. They spell cat, K-A-T. Now, we all know that they will not get admitted to a great university if in primary one they spell cat with a K, right? Yeah, they're doomed for life. Yeah. The parents, my kid cannot spell cat with a K. Yeah. But they do. It's not a big deal. Yeah. Do parents think it's a big deal? Oh, my goodness. Yeah. And so what do you say to your kid? And you call them all sorts of things. And then, you know, after you've, same thing with your spouse. Yeah. Then the next day, then what do you do the next day? After you said things that weren't even true to insult somebody, how do you look at them the next day? Is it easy to look at them? Do you look at, get up and smile? Hi, dear. No. Yeah, you feel ashamed. Yeah, because you totally lost control. And you know that it really damaged the relationship. Mm-hmm. So anger is not our friend. Sometimes when we get angry, we're really trying to say, I care. But we can't, we don't, instead of saying, I care, we unload on them and get really mad. Okay, I'll give you an example. One of my friends was working at a retreat center in the U.S. And another friend who had gone to India gave him his car to use while he was in India. Okay? So this car was in good shape, except, yeah, the friend who loaned my friend the car said that sometimes the hood would fly up. Yeah? So he had to watch out for that. Okay. So my friend's driving the car and he's commuting from the retreat center to the city. Yeah. And one day he's supposed to meet me in the city and he doesn't show up at the agreed time. And this was in the days before everybody, before cell phones, you know, back with the dinosaurs. No cell phones. So I'm worried about him, you know, and you know, he didn't show up at that time. I wait 10 minutes, still not. Okay, he may have hit traffic. A half an hour later, he still didn't show up. I'm getting more concerned. Yeah, traffic is bad, but that bad? But maybe really bad traffic. I wait. So he shows up, I don't know, maybe an hour and 15 minutes, hour and a half late. And he comes in and I said, what happened to you? What happened? And he said, I was driving along the highway and the hood flew up. And of course, when the hood flies up, you can't see where you're going. So he had to get off the highway and then walk to some place where they had a telephone and, you know, call the towing company to come get the car. So he, you know, we had talked about this car with the hood flying up. And I had said, you know, get it fixed. Yeah, if something's broken. Yeah, and especially if it's dangerous, you get it fixed. Well, he was in and then of course the lid, you know, the hood flew up. And he's lucky to be alive. He walks in the house, told me what happened. I was so mad. Yeah. Why didn't you get it fixed? Yeah, this is total irresponsibility. You could have gotten killed. You could have killed a number of other people by causing, an accident on the highway. Yeah, and I was mad. Okay. And I realized later, why was I mad? It was because I cared about him and I cared about other people. But I couldn't say at that time, I care about you. I was so worried. I'm glad you're safe. I didn't say that. I said, nah. Yeah. That was, on my part, that was stupid, wasn't it? You know? I mean, when you care about somebody, you should say, I care about you, and I'm glad you're safe. Huh? Okay, so how often do we do that? We get mad when we really should be saying, I care about you. Actually, especially with the people that we care about the most, when you are furious at them, yeah, what is it that you really want? Okay, when you are furious and you're either blasting them and throwing something, or you've totally retreated in your room and slammed the door and won't talk to them, or marched out of your flat and gone somewhere else, what is it at that moment when you're furious, what is it in your heart that you really want? Yeah, what is it that you really want? Do you really want to take revenge? Do you really want to hurt their feelings? Actually, I think what we really want at that moment is to be close to them, to have good understanding and good communication with them. Yeah, think about it. When you're really mad at a family member, isn't in the depth of your heart, do you really want to be mad and stay mad and hurt them? Or do you really, at that moment, want to be close to them? Yeah, think about it, okay? So my point here is that, you know, at least when I look in my mind, when I get mad in those circumstances, it's very often because I care about them. And they said something I didn't like, or I did something that they didn't like and we're quarreling. Yeah. But instead of sitting down and working out the situation, the anger just takes over and runs the show. Yeah. Yeah. So we sentient beings often self-sabotage, or to use slang, we shoot ourselves in the foot. Yeah, when you shoot, you want to walk. When you shoot yourself in the foot, can you walk? No. So we're actually, when we are angry, are often acting counter to what we really want. Yeah? Because we really want to be close to that person. You may have a roommate that you don't get along with. Yeah? Do you really want to be a roommate and, like, say that person's a creep, I can't stand them? Or would you really like to get along with your roommate? Yeah? Do you want to live with a roommate that you don't like, that you always get mad at? No. It would be so much nicer to have a good relationship with them. But do you act as if you want to have a good relationship with them? Or do you go, you know, you cook dinner and then you look, you, well, people in Singapore don't cook dinner. They go out. Okay. Yeah, so you went out, you brought something from the hawker stand back home. Yeah, and you left all the cartons and paper all over the kitchen. Yeah, you just made a mess. You didn't clean it up. What, you think that I'm your slave and I'm going to clean up after you? Yeah, yeah, we're roommates and, you know, we divided the chores and you better stick, you know, to what you are your chores, and we both decided that we would both clean the kitchen when we made a mess and you didn't do it. Okay, so you want to live with somebody that you talk like that to? Or even you don't say it, you walk into the kitchen and it's dirty and you look at your roommate. Yeah. You did this on purpose. You don't like me, and you did it on purpose. Yeah? Do we really want to live in that situation? No. No. But we shoot ourselves in the foot and keep on, you know, attacking them or ignoring them. Or gossiping about them behind their back. Or doing subtle little things that we know will really annoy them. Yeah. But we don't do it obviously. Yeah. This happens in families a lot. Yeah. You're jealous or mad at somebody in your family. And you know that person really well. So you say exactly the thing that you know is going to be like a knife in their heart and really hurt their feelings. But you say it so sweetly, so subtly. Yeah. That when they say to you afterwards, why did you say that to me? You go, say anything. You just misunderstood it. I didn't have any bad intention. I'm so glad I hurt their feelings. Yeah? Anybody here do that? Yeah. Oh, one person. Oh, two people. Oh, three people. Oh, a few, few. Okay. Okay. Yeah, let's talk about some more benefits of anger. Yeah? Okay. So, in my family, yeah, in my family, on the my mother's side of the family, they hold grudges, yeah? So when I was little, like this big, the family, the extended family, had some property that bordered a lake. And so the different parts of the family would go there in the summer, yeah, because there were four different apartments there. And I was told as a little girl, the people in the apartment up the hill on the top floor, you don't talk to them. Why not? You just don't talk to them. But I thought they were our relatives. You don't talk to them. Okay. Years later, I found out why we don't talk to them. It's because on the level of my grandparents, something happened between those siblings. I don't even know what it was that happened. Yeah, but the siblings on my grandparents' generation, yeah, we didn't get along because something happened. Okay. And so that made me vow, I am never going to do like that. Okay. Then I watched some years go past. Yeah. And then on the level of my parents' generation, so it went from my grandparents' generation to my parents' generation, then those siblings don't speak to each other. Well, actually, my mom spoke to her sister, but they didn't speak to one of the brothers, you know? And I had no idea why. I still don't know why, but they were not talking. Okay, then I think my generation, we're going to be different. Well, some years went by. I met one of my cousins that I hadn't seen for a while when I went back to the U.S. And I find out that of her four siblings, she speaks to one of them. Yeah. I don't know why she doesn't speak to the rest of them. Mm-mm. But they don't. Okay. So when somebody in my extended family gets married, yeah, and they want to have a party, to make a seating arrangement is impossible. Because this one doesn't speak to that one, and that one doesn't speak to this one, and these two only speak to one of that couple, but that couple doesn't like this person who's friends with that person. You know, you can't make a seating chart because they won't even sit at the same table at a wedding when you're supposed to be celebrating. And I never know the reason for these grudges and these family disputes. Yeah. Actually, I'm not interested in the reason. Yeah. But how many of you have families that have that happen? Oh, some of you are nodding your heads, yeah. It's sad, isn't it? It's really sad. Yeah, and the thing also is that it gets passed down in families. My grandparents' generation were mad at each other, they didn't speak. My parents' generation mad at each other. My generation mad at each other. Well, how about their children? Yeah. because you see what your parents do and how your parents speak about their siblings and how your parents speak about their parents, and then you just copy that because you're a kid and you learn by example, by watching what your parents do. Yeah, so when you criticize other relatives or other people in general, when you criticize them in front of your kids, what are you teaching your kids? Yeah, is that what you want your kids to learn? That they should then fight with each other when they're adults and not speak to each other? No, you want your kids to be harmonious, don't you? Yeah. So be careful about what you say. Okay. So we're almost, well, actually, it's past 9 o'clock. So we have another day to talk about anger. Tomorrow I'll talk about some of the antidotes to anger, how to work with your mind. Okay, when you're angry, so we'll talk about that tomorrow. But, you know, really think about what we talked about today. Is anger beneficial or not? How do you act when you're angry? Yeah. Do you create harmony in your family, harmony at your workplace when you're angry? Okay. Do you scream at people when you really want to say, I want to be close to you, or I care about you? Yeah? So think about these things so that you get very clear in your mind the disadvantages of anger. Mm-hmm. Now I'll open it up for Q&A. But I'll tell you the kind of questions I usually get when I talk about anger, okay? One of the main questions is, my brother, sister, father, mother, son, daughter, colleague, friend has a real problem with anger. How can I help them get over their anger? Yeah, that's one of the main questions I ask, that people ask me. If you ask that question, I'm going to ask you about your anger. Because your anger is the only thing you can control. And if you have the mind that I want to change somebody else so that they will be nicer to me, that's a rather self-centered motivation, isn't it? Okay. The next question I get asked is, this one isn't about your friend or relative who has the problem with anger, but I have a problem with anger because so-and-so did this and that to me. And then the person in the audience describes the whole situation. The question becomes very long. Yeah. Because they did this, and then I just said that. Then they did this, and I just said, and then they did, and then they did. You know, so what do I do? Okay, now, I cannot answer that question. I do not know you well. I do not know the person you're well at, well, you're mad at. I do not know the whole situation very well. I am not the person in the newspaper who writes advice columns. Yeah. So I cannot tell you what to do in terms of your personal problem. Okay. I can, and tomorrow night I will, tell you how to deal with your own anger. Okay. But if you ask me how to deal with this problem with somebody else, I'm going to ask you, What did you do to contribute to the problem? Because you already told me whatever the other person did. But how did you contribute? Okay. So be wary of answering those two type of questions. Also, what I've noticed, especially in Singapore, most of the questions concern your boss. My boss does this, my boss does this, my boss, my this. Your boss, you would think that your boss had fangs and horns and went around the office, you know, like a vampire just wanting to get everybody by the way you talk about that person. So I think you should actually have in Singapore a be good to your boss day. Yeah? It should be a national holiday. Everybody is kind to their boss. And then maybe from that, you might continue on another day practicing being kind to your boss. Okay? So I already know that you don't like your boss. You don't need to raise your hand and tell me. Okay? But you do need to think about how you can be kind to your boss. Yeah, how you can be kind to your boss. Okay, now, questions.
Thank you, Rabbi. How do we handle anger with myself?
Okay, anger at yourself. Oh, which actually makes me remember, I wanted to tell you about this book, Working with Anger. His Holiness has one too called Healing Anger. I wrote this one. And the reason I wrote it was, I'll get around to your question someday, but I gotta tell you this story first. So I didn't think I had a problem with anger. So, you know, I was a nun. I don't have a problem with anger. Sometimes people do these things that make me mad, but I don't yell and scream and blow up, you know. I'm not that kind of person. So I thought, no problem with anger. So, and if my teachers had told me, you know, you have a problem with anger, I would have said, no. Yeah, I don't have a problem with anger. Why are you saying that? Well, so what did my teachers do? They sent me to work in a Dharma center. Yeah, ooh. And they sent me to be the disciplinarian of the monks at that center. And these were not just ordinary monks. They were macho Italian monks. Okay, anybody here ever dealt with a macho Italian man? Let me warn you. Okay, if you're a woman, it doesn't look good for you. Okay, so my teacher sent me there to work with them. I was their disciplinarian. So the last person they want to hear anything from is a woman, because they're macho, and an American woman who speaks straightforwardly, honestly, not some meek little woman who says, sweet. No, that's not me, okay? So we did not get along very well. And yet we had to work together. So I won't tell you all the story. So I would get really angry, furious, okay? And one of my teachers had taught chapter 6, not from this book, from chapter 6 from Shanti Deva's engaging in the Bodhisattva's deeds. Chapter 6 is all about patience or fortitude, working with anger. So I would get mad in the daytime. I would go back to my room. I would read chapter 6. Calm down. Okay, so I could sleep. Next day, get up, go to the office again, and then they said something or did this or that, and I got mad again. And in the evening, I came home and took out chapter 6 and studied it some more. So this went on for a long time. Yeah, so I got to know chapter 6 pretty well. So that's how this book got written, because it's all plagiarized from Shantideva. Yeah, but Shantideva is a bodhisattva, and he didn't sue me. Shoot. But what he wrote really helped me. Yeah. So your question was, what do you do when you're mad at yourself? The reason it made me think about this is because there's a chapter in here about getting mad at yourself. Chapter 15, Anger at Ourselves. Okay. So, what do we do when we're mad at ourselves? First of all, we have to look at how we talk to ourselves. And you know what your internal talk is, not what you say to others about yourself. Yeah, because when we present ourselves from others and on the to others and on the internet, we are wonderful, aren't we? You know, especially on a dating app, you are the greatest person. Ooh, okay, we're not talking about that. Yeah, because then you really, you know, put yourself out there. But when, you know, you think about your actions and things, do you say nice things to yourself, or are you critical of yourself? Yeah? Do you say, oh, why did I say that? That was so stupid. I always say the wrong things to people. Or, oh, you know, I totally forgot to do this, and I let somebody down. You know, I can't think straight. I'm very forgetful. What's wrong with me? Or, I can't do anything right. Yeah, I was using the washing machine, and I broke it. Yeah, or I broke the computer, or whatever it is. I can't do anything right. I make a mess of everything. Any of you say those kind of things to yourself? Yeah? Do you say to yourself, I'm not lovable, nobody will love me. Yeah, nobody's ever going to love me. And if they loved me and thought I was a good person, that's because they're stupid. They don't really know who I am. Do you say that? Do you talk like that to yourself? Yeah? Watch what you say to yourself, because very often we put ourselves down. Everybody else is so good looking, but not me. Yeah? Look, I have so many freckles. Yeah? And things on my arm. Nobody's gonna like me. I don't look like the models in the magazine with their perfect complexion, just like Ivanka Trump. No pimples. Oh, but I'm not very attractive. Nobody's gonna like me. Okay. If you look at how you talk to yourself, there's a lot of self-deprecation, yeah? Putting ourselves down, picking faults at ourselves, not seeing our good qualities, not giving ourselves credit for what we do well, but just constant criticism. Okay. Then, okay, here's what you do. Look at what some of the things that you say to yourself. Nobody's going to love me. I always make a mess. This was all my fault. I can't do anything right. Yeah. As soon as I touch something, it breaks. As soon as I open my mouth, I always say the wrong thing. Okay. If you look at those things, you might even write them down. There's a lot of very absolutist words in those things. Always, never, nobody, everybody. Yeah, you always make a mistake? Always? Come on. Come on, nobody always makes a mistake. I can't do anything right. Anything? Yeah? You got dressed and combed your hair in the morning and brushed your teeth. You can do something, right? Hmm? Okay. Nobody's gonna love me. Really? Nobody? Come on. Come on. You cannot say nobody loves you. I work with the people who are incarcerated. They all have somebody who loves them. You can't say nobody loves you. Yeah. They may not show their love the way you want them to. You want them to give you flowers and perfume and take you out to expensive things and praise you all the time. And that's not their way of showing love. But they love you, and they show their love in another way. Okay? So when you really look at how we talk to ourselves, it's very extremist language. Yeah? And it's mostly lies. I can't do anything right. That is a lie. Yeah. This whole relationship fell apart because of me. It's all my fault. All of it is your fault? That's impossible. Everybody contributes something. So look at the absolutist language. And then also look and see if what you're saying to yourself about yourself is true. Most of it is a bunch of lies. Yeah. So when you see that you're lying to yourself, stop lying. Yeah. See that you have some good qualities. Everybody has some good qualities. Yeah. Everybody can do things right. Everybody has somebody who loves them. Okay, everybody has talents that they can contribute to society. Yeah, so you have to stop that being so harsh with yourself, and you know, be kind to yourself, and see your good qualities. You don't need to get arrogant about your good qualities. But you do see them, and you know that you can use them and benefit other people with them. So there's no need to sit there and, like, beat yourself all the time. Mm-hmm. I talked to one young man who came to the Abbey, and he was, you know, he had gotten very down on himself. And I said, you know, why are you so critical? What are you getting out of being so critical of yourself? And he said, I'm afraid if I'm not critical of myself, I won't be motivated to do things. Oh my goodness. Like, in other words, why he does things is by telling himself he's stupid. You know, oh, I'm so stupid. That means at work I have to work extra hard. Yeah, those kinds of things. Totally unrealistic. Okay, so be careful of that. Okay, so two people are now going to be mad at me, at least a few others of you, because we're out of time and I'm not going to answer your questions now. So get your tomatoes ready. You can throw them. Okay. And I'm practicing patience and fortitude, and I will smile as each one clumps. It's my faith.